Hi and welcome everybody. My name is Maria Skura and I am Policy Fellow at Das Progressive Zentrum. You're listening to our podcast Talking Progress. This podcast explores new ideas for social progress in Germany, Europe and transatlantic spaces. This is episode 4 of our series on the just transition of the industrial heartlands in the US and Germany. Today we explore the challenges facing democracy in the US and Europe, focusing on the implications of the 2024 US elections. We'll examine the factors behind these shifts, from rising distrust in government to growing political polarization, and the lessons they hold for safeguarding democratic resilience. The United States is Europe's long-term ally in global security and economic networks, like NATO and G7. The gravity of this cooperation has only become more evident in current geopolitical circumstances, like the Russian war against Ukraine. Meanwhile, in November 2024, the United States held presidential and general elections. Donald Trump managed to return to the White House, and the Republican Party retained a majority in Congress, dominating federal politics with a Republican trifecta. This result was caused by issues such as the rising cost of living and the neglected situation at the southern border. The insecurity about the future and disaffection with political mainstream reveal cracks in democratic resilience in the United States. The minimalist definition of democracy sees it as an institutional framework channeling the will of the people into government action through free and fair elections. But the spirit of democracy is embodied in principles. The term resilience originates from natural sciences, referring to the properties of materials which can withstand a major disruption and return to the original form. Democratic resilience is a synergy of democratic structures and practices. The institutional dimension represents system performance, such as codified mechanism of power control and political regime. The social-cultural dimension relies on internalized values and norms. Democracies are therefore resilient not only through the democratic method, but also by serving the purpose of democracy. The repeated victory of Donald Trump is not a result of a democratic decline, but rather a fatigue symptom of the American democracy. First, public trust in government has been historically low in the United States. At the same time, we are facing the rise of an anti-establishment, identity-based political actor on the right flank of the political spectrum, the Make America Great Again movement, also known as MAGA. Second, partisan polarization has significantly increased, resulting in the two-party hyperpolarization. Political divisions also affect human interactions. Both Republicans and Democrats view the members of the opposite party negatively. Less than half of Americans are still able to find common bipartisan ground. Finally, the erosion of the media landscape weakens access to quality information and exposes the general public to disinformation. Alternative media channels diffusing conspiracy theories about the election fraud played a crucial role in mobilizing political violence on January 6 in 2021, when the armed mob attacked the US Capitol. Compared to the United States, German institutions seem more stable. Yet the risks emerging here, like institutional distrust, political polarization, rising radical movements, are similar. They should neither be ignored nor downplayed. Democracy is a key ingredient of stability. We should learn from each other how to prevent weakening its gentle fabric through policies that serve social cohesion, not division. Now we will hear from Will Marshall, president and founder of the Progressive Policy Institute based in Washington, D.C., who analyzes the electoral struggles of the center-left. He highlights the democratic paradox with capital D, the retreat of the party into urban regions while disconnecting from their traditional electorate, the working class. Rising distrust in government was another factor driving people towards Republicans. The following part of the podcast was produced by our partners from the Progressive Policy Institute.
Well, we've just had a terrible election from the point of view of a center-left party in the United States. What we found had happened is that Democrats seem to be retracting into their metro centers. The political geography of the United States is such that we thought that there was a blue zone that was impregnable, but it wasn't. Donald Trump made some real important geographical inroads into what we consider to be blue areas or Democratic states and areas. He did, I think he won every county in New York. Excuse me, he did not win them, but he advanced in every county. So, and he advanced in states like New Jersey, which are reliably Democratic. So it was a sweep of his victory, graphically and demographically, that I think has been shocking to Democrats. We were led to believe this was going to be a close election, a dead heat, as the innumerable polls taken assured us. But in the end, it was wider than that. It was not, I should say, a landslide by no means, not even close. Donald Trump won 49.9% of the vote at last count. That's only 1.6 percentages more than Kamala Harris received. So it was not a landslide. It was still a fairly narrow victory, but the breadth of it was impressive. And the trajectory is the thing that ought to really worry Democrats. We saw Trump make gains not only in Democratic areas, but among Democratic voter groups, and most dramatically among Black and Asian and especially Latino voters, which he ended up winning 46% of the Latino vote. Now, this is really significant for Democrats because we have long counted on voters of color, Black and Latino and Asian American voters, to be a sturdy pillar of our coalition. But it isn't sturdy. We're hemorrhaging voters, particularly non-college or working class voters. And the big takeaway in this election was the merger, or the fact that the non-white working class joined the white working class in voting for Republicans in a major way for really the first time. That has to be concerning for Democrats.
Yeah, we witnessed a lot of this traveling through Pennsylvania, Ohio, and Michigan on our trip. And, you know, something PPI and you have kind of championed for, you know, well over the last year, looking at what the Democratic Party should be doing policy-wise to talk to these voters and the importance of that, those voters in the electorate. You want to have any numbers on that or thoughts on how we can move forward?
Well, look, there's a new class configuration in American politics, and it's not one working to the Democrats' advantage. Non-college voters are, as I just said, leaving the party. White blue-collar voters started leaving a long time ago under Nixon and Reagan. Now they're being joined by particularly Black and particularly Asian non-white voters as well, and most particularly Latinos. So what kind of party are we? We're a metropolitan party. We are strong in the cities. We're strong among educated and relatively affluent urban elites and professionals. So the question is, how has it come about that the party that always thought of itself as the party of the people, the ordinary working man and woman in America, the Democrats, since Franklin Roosevelt's New Deal, how have they become a party that is the upscale party, while Republicans can make a plausible claim to be the party of a multi-ethnic working class? And so that's the new configuration. And mathematically, it means that Democrats really can't put together broad and durable coalitions, majorities. Two-thirds of the voters do not have college degrees, roughly speaking. And so you just can't build majorities on college-educated professionals. Simply aren't enough of them. But morally, you wouldn't want to, not if you are a party that takes seriously your historic mission to champion the economic aspirations and the values of ordinary working folks.
We saw, I think, a lot of focus in these communities on the local level, bringing their resources to bear to make those communities better. And it was markedly a lack of awareness of what the federal government was doing. And this belies what the Biden administration had been doing for the last 4 years, is talking about how much federal money and help was coming in. And we heard almost nothing about that from people on the ground. Is this kind of pointing us in the direction of different federal policy or more of a focus on local state policy moving forward for the Democrats?
Well, this is the grand mystery of the campaign of 2024. Certainly, Joe Biden and Vice President Harris and their team in the White House thought that all the big bills passed over the past 4 years, that these bills were for the benefit of average working Americans. Joe Biden hardly let a day go pass wherein he didn't say what a pro-union president he was, appeared on picket lines. He was a pro-union president. So certainly the Democrats thought they were doing things that would be help persuade working class voters that Democrats were no longer overlooking them or forgetting about them. but we're in fact making the system work for them, the economic system. But that's not the way they saw it. And the obvious reason they didn't see it that way was inflation, a high cost of living. They got blindsided by inflation. And it just, you know, it made all the wonderful things the Democrats were talking about, the things they had done in Washington, seem theoretical and remote, because every day they were facing the erosion of their purchasing power as fuel and food, and health services, transportation, gas, everything rose to punishing levels. So, you know, the obvious explanation for why Bidenomics did not land with working class voters is inflation and the cost of living. But I think there's another systemic problem that Democrats probably don't take seriously enough. And that is, these voters are angry. They're alienated. They think for about a generation they've been forsaken by the establishments, really, of both political parties. Because don't forget, Donald Trump is not an ordinary Republican. He is a populist insurgent who, in some respects, brings far left and far right together. And so the working class voters, they have massive mistrust for the federal government and all of its works. They think it's been commandeered by progressive elites and professionals. They think it doesn't work for them. And they think that those elites, in fact, more than that, blame them for all kinds of societal ills like racism and discrimination against LGBT people and things like that. So they feel not only forgotten, but also disrespected. So I think we have to grapple with the reality that the instrument by which Democrats propose to do good things for voters is not trusted by them. And certainly, you know, the Biden programs, and many of which we supported because they were good public investments in our productive capacity, our future productive capacity. Rural broadband is a great idea. The infrastructure bill is a great idea. The investments in clean energy and in science and technology were well done, and they're important. But they weren't what the working class voters needed over the past 3.5 years. And so it was this disjuncture in which the governing elite said, this is what's important, and you ought to understand that. Whereas voters said, well, hang on. Here are the things that are vexing us, and what are you doing about that? So there was this mismatch. And look, the Biden programs, the money eventually will get spent. It seems that you can't build anything in America these days quickly, expeditiously. But the money will eventually get spent, and people will benefit. Maybe Donald Trump will benefit as they begin to feel better about things, which would be the irony of ironies. But as much as inflation was the immediate problem, I think that this lack of confidence in Washington, the federal government, the national political or governing class was also a huge factor.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Talking Progress that summarized the lessons learned for progressives from the U.S. elections. Stay tuned for more conversations that matter. Till next time.